Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kerbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. As a special episode, I'm sharing my 2023 ABA Tech Show session. This will hopefully get you hyped for my 2024 ABA Tech Show session on the subscription model, this time with a focus on how artificial intelligence makes billing time simply not a profitable business model for law firms anymore, and how to leverage AI to have a successful subscription-based law practice. I'm co-presenting with former guest of the show, Stephanie Everett, the CEO of Lawyerist. Go to techshow.com to register for the show, taking place in Chicago from February 14th to 17th in 2024. Link to that in the show notes. If you're listening to the audio-only version, I encourage you to subscribe to the newsletter on Substack where you can watch the full video transcript that captures some of the audience questions that didn't always come through in spite of my post-production attempts at clarity. Also, I'm referring to a deck throughout the session, so keep that in mind when listening. If you want a copy of my deck, then follow and message me on LinkedIn and I can get you a copy. I'm also going to share a link to the deck with my Substack subscribers. Link to subscribe to that newsletter in the show notes as well. Thank you, as always, to my sponsors, 650 and Gavel. Links to both of those in the show notes, and remember to use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED when signing up. It lets them know you found out about them from the podcast, you get 10% off, and it supports this show. If you're interested in learning how to launch and produce a podcast for your firm, I'm also presenting on that subject at the 2024 ABA Tech Show. If you can't wait for that, this is the last week to sign up for a cohort-based course I'm teaching using the Maven platform. Seats are limited, so sign up using the link in the show notes. Another way to support this show is to share it with someone you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode.
My name is Matthew Kerbis. I'm the subscription attorney. I'm actually not going to be talking very much about myself today, but I talk about myself a lot. MatthewKerbis.com. You can see all my speaking engagements. You can learn a lot about my firm there. I will talk a little bit about myself today, but this is a very broad scope because there's all kinds of different practice areas, different ways you could implement it. We just heard in the last talk some things that I agree with wholeheartedly and some things I respectfully disagree with. So there's no one right way to do it, and there's no one right way to do it for your practice. But before we get into the meat of it, well, you know, did you read the syllabus? Did you prepare? You're here because you probably read these things, right? This is what we're going to be covering in this order. And hopefully, you'll be subscribing to the subscription model. Here we go. Hypothetical one. There are only 24 hours in a day. Lucky associates, or you if you're solo like me, get 6 hours of sleep, 2 hours combined of bathing, restroom breaks, eating in a day. If you need to commute, maybe 1.5 hours to get there and back, family time. We'll give you a generous hour and a half. Non-billable work throughout the day is maybe 2 hours if you're really efficient, leaving 11 hours of possible billable time per day. But if you are an associate, your partner marks down your billable time. Your clients negotiate down billable time. So only 8 hours of billable time per day that a client will actually pay, assuming everything goes smoothly. And, you know, that means you have to maximize your time. You have to plan in advance, engage in deep work, like batching. See, I was listening. Recording your hours right away and not putting out unexpected fires, which, you know, never happens, ever. Unless you only check your emails twice a day and clients can't call you. So if you charge $500 an hour with 40 paid client hours per week, you know, you're about $1 million a year. I'm rounding there. Maybe you pay your associates $100,000 to $200,000. Staff firm costs for that associate is approximately that. This is not hard data. These are just approximations for storytelling purposes. Maybe you invest a little bit back into the firm and then the partners pocket the rest, assuming everything goes smoothly. How do you make more money with this model? You hire more lawyers. You bill more time. That's the only way. It's the only way to make more money with the billable hour model. What has been the result of this model? Look at the status quo. Bad mental health, substance abuse, burnout, recovering attorney status. How many technologists on the expo floor hall are recovering attorneys, right? Should we be so lucky? Lack of women and attorneys of color in big law leadership roles. Lack of access to justice and lack of access to lawyers. Deregulation of legal services. And they tell us not to sell from the podium. I have nothing to sell you. I'm a practicing attorney. But I do this because this is about saving the profession. enter the subscription model? Not yet. If you'll bear with me, I want to dunk on it a little bit more. That is the billable hour model. So why do clients negotiate the bill? Because the billable hour is like going to a restaurant, ordering the fish at market price, except the server can't tell you how much it's going to cost until you've finished eating the fish. That's because, first, how long is it going to take? It has to hatch in its egg, it has to grow to maturity, it has to get caught by fishermen. By the way, if the fisherman is less experienced, then we charge less. But it's going to take them longer, so we're actually charging you more. The fisherman needs to transport it to the distributor, and so on, until eventually it gets to the restaurant. Then the chef has to prepare the fish, and it's the same thing as the fisherman with the chef's experience. And then how long does it take for the server to deliver it to your plate? And then you have to eat the fish, and you know that's when you're really getting the benefit of the restaurant services. Then you're presented with the bill. You owe the restaurant, whether you like it or not. Pay up, or we'll see you in court to collect. Did I mention all restaurants charge the same? Like this way? And the restaurants, by the way, they have a monopoly on fish. Good luck eating fish anywhere else that isn't a restaurant. And did we mention it's actually illegal for non-restaurants to provide you with fish? Would you order the fish? I wouldn't. Why do we expect our clients to? Enter the subscription model. Finally. Here are some of the benefits. Predictable monthly recurring revenue and annual recurring revenue. This is hard in the first year, but when you have a year's worth of data to look back on, it becomes a little bit easier, but you could also look at projected growth this way. This is how a lot of tech startups project the revenue. There's so much information on this. Start listening to This Week in Startups and a lot of startup podcasts. You can learn all about MRR and ARR. That could be an hour-long presentation. Predictable and transparent pricing for clients. Hopefully you got the message with the last hypothetical. Clients are not afraid to call or contact you. So, you know, you're developing relationships with your clients. They will continue to come to you. It incentivizes you to be efficient and effective, right? So you adopt technology. Congratulations, you're at Tech Show. The people in this room are already ahead of the game. Scale is possible without more hiring. Overcomes a labor shortage, which we have in this profession. It doesn't mean you can't hire. It just means it allows you to scale. Lifetime value, also known as LTV in the subscription economy, for and from clients. So that means you're giving them lifetime value and they're paying you in exchange. And so instead of getting a one-time, really, really big case from a client where you make $100,000, over the course of the lifetime that you're representing them, you can maybe make twice as much. There's huge market opportunity here for institutional clients who want to cut costs. There's a blue ocean of market opportunities for clients who are previously priced out of the billable hour and traditionally priced legal services, AKA the latent legal market. You could compete with LegalZoom, but then you could actually provide legal services. You could be your own version of LegalZoom. This is productizing legal services. And I should say, you know, it depends on your practice area, right? But for a lot of practice areas, this is an option. Some further benefits: it reduces burnout, improves mental health. Attorneys are rewarded for efficiency and it aligns incentives with clients. How, again, going back to saving the profession, how are we going to compete with other industries for talent when the 4-day work week is going to be a thing? And it will be. How can we compete when you have to bill time and that's the only way you make money? People will stop going to law school. Our profession needs to survive. And if we don't make these changes, we should re-regulate and deregulate to allow more alternative legal service providers because people need access to justice. So it increases access to justice and you can make more money. And that's okay. We can increase access to justice and we can make more money. Client expectations have changed. Remote meetings are expected, which is better for you because if you're not going places in person or commuting to and from an office and you have a virtual law firm, you're being more efficient with your time, which is what this is all about. You know, Zoom, Teams, Google Meet are on most client smartphones. Easy scheduling is expected. They don't want to have to call someone to try to get somebody on the phone. And when can you get scheduled together? We'll go into that technology soon. Cost transparency is huge. All of my prices on my website. I think I may be one of like 8 attorneys now that I've come across who do that. Adoption of most legal tech eliminates billable hours. Were you at the startup pitch competition? With the exception of maybe one of those startups, it all reduces billable time. Other industries do it, so why can't legal service providers? We can. So what do you need? You heard a lot about this in the last presentation. Client portal, really important. Online payments, client relationship manager, CRM, newsletter tool, if it's not already built into some of these other things. A lot of these are bundled. A lot of the legal tech client portal solutions have a lot of these bundled, though for a lot of reasons, they're not really built for the subscription model, and you'll see a lot of timekeeping on them, unless you're looking at Fidu, who's in the back, represent. They were my winners for the pitch competition. You know, a lot of these tools, legal tech tools, are not doing it, which is why when I got started, I was using non-legal tech. Scheduling, that's just an internet phone, secure video calls, document sharing, automate everything. Really leverage technology to automate everything that you can. Within the client portal, there's matter management, private messaging, doc sharing. You should be able to do these or do your best to integrate these when looking for a client portal solution. You should be able to set up marketing campaigns, newsletters. Different attorneys have different opinions on whether or not a newsletter or reaching out should be a benefit of a subscription. I think it can be. It doesn't mean it should be, depending on your practice, but it can be. Look at Substack. People are paying just to read what other people are writing. Independent journalism is having a renaissance right now. There's actual value that you could provide in a newsletter form that keeps you sharp, that keeps you up to date on things going on and changes in the law that you're gonna be doing anyway, and why not make that a benefit to subscribers? I am an anti-SEO attorney. I take all the stuff that would normally go in a blog and I put it into my knowledge base that's a subscriber benefit. And it's actual client questions that have been asked, but with personal identifying information removed. So it's actual legal advice I've given, not legal information, only accessible to paying clients which I'm engaged with. But that's just me, you can do both. You need e-signatures integrated ideally, payments, and there's different types we'll get into. Client portal ideally will power your subscriptions. I know Stripe and Gravity Legal, you could power subscriptions just through those payment platforms. But if you're using some other payment methods, you're gonna need a solution to power your subscriptions. Scheduling should integrate with your client portal. Basically, everything goes in your client portal, becomes your practice management software. Ideally, if you could get Google Workspace or Microsoft 365 to integrate, that's great, but they don't all do that. And websites, my client portal website is portal.subscriptionattorney.com. So it's integrated there as well. But it doesn't have to be, but that would be more ideal. So here's some tech. Fidu, right? They exclusively help with a turnkey solution. Rally does offer it, but they don't specialize in it. Rally has a lot of offerings, including Spellbook, which is on the show floor, which incorporates, I think, GPT-3 with Microsoft Word, and they were sort of doing it before ChatGPT came out, which is pretty cool. But they also have a turnkey solution to launching a subscription billing model for your firm. Clio integrates with Fidu, so there you go. My case, the acquisitions they've had, they have a lot of great features, Practice Panther. A lot of these client portals are on the show floor. I highly recommend you check them out. Non-legal tech, Sweet Dash, this is where I am right now, though I am looking for an alternative solution, but it's done a really good job to be a minimum viable client portal. You've got Outsetta, which is a subscriptions as a service business. So help all entrepreneurs of all kinds launch subscription models. They're not as flexible as I would like, but depending on what you want to do and you don't want to use legal tech, that is an option. They also have a monthly fee and they take 1% or 2% on top of all the transactions that go through. So they're a little bit more expensive, but they are pretty cool. Copilot is a relatively new one. I have been doing research on them. They just raised a Series A. Clinked made the presentation. So you know one flat fee lawyer using it. Smart Vault is another one. And then Jess Birkin uses WordPress plugins in WooCommerce. There's MemberMouse 2, client-portal.io, and so many more if you have a WordPress website. I don't. Blogging is not part of my marketing strategy, but it can be yours. So you need to automate charges. When I have a client sign up through my client portal, through my website, which then gets them into my client portal, all of it's automated. I never even need to interact with them. I'm notified they sign up, I could do my conflicts check, and if they pass, then I don't need to do anything, and it's all automated. So all I have to do is just do a conflicts check. And soon that will be automated for me too. I'm in the process, like I said, of switching some things over. But then every single month, they're charged, and since my clients often will decide to pull the trigger at night because all my information's on my website. They could sign up on my website. I don't even need to interact with them, though I make it really easy to do that, and I'll talk about that. I literally get paid when I'm sleeping. Quick and easy payments. You gotta make them quick and easy. I already mentioned this, like Gravity and Stripe can power it if your client portal doesn't do it. In an ideal world, I'm still looking for a non-WordPress-based solution to do this. If you can make it a Shopify for lawyers where they could just check out in your cart, that's ideal. And really right now, Jess Birkin is the only attorney who I know who's using subscriptions who actually does this. You can securely store credit cards for depending on how you set up your fee structure. And what's really cool, what I love, is I'm an attorney who takes Apple Pay, Google Pay, and foreign transactions. I've represented Canadians transacting in Illinois and UK citizens transacting in Illinois. And it's really easy. I don't even have to worry about it. Yeah, sure, it's a little bit of an extra charge on the processing fees, but you know what? Super easy. And I do my due diligence and I make sure I comply ethically and all that stuff. I have a lot to cover and not a lot of time. Secure messaging, better preserves attorney-client privilege. Arguably, if you're emailing with your clients, you're waiving attorney-client privilege. It's unsecured messaging. You should have no expectation that that is encrypted and secure, even if you put that little paragraph at the end that nobody reads. Certain online payment features help you with churn reduction management. So churn is when people unsubscribe. Here are some examples: Stripe, Recurly, ChargeBee, Chargeify, ProfitWell, Paddle, Braintree. There's a lot of them. And then for trust accounting, you've got Gravity Legal and LawPay. And LawPay is not part of my case. You might be able to, with some of these tools, like Stripe, if you know how to code or are willing to hire somebody, you might be able to get them to pay for the processing fees through an operating account. But Gravity Legal and LawPay just do that. And I've heard attorneys using QuickBooks with some success who are using the subscription model and need trust accounting. For scheduling, you control your calendar instead of it controlling you, which means you're automating scheduling of all different kinds. Intake, consultations with other attorneys that know your schedule, going back to the last presentation, with your team members and more. Put everything in your calendar. You're already here at Tech Show. It's time to just embrace Calendly links, Acuity links, all that stuff, including for inside your own team. Using automations and setting up automations takes time. Even if you're hiring somebody to do it for you, you're gonna have to meet with them to figure out how much buffer time that you want when setting up your automations. I use Calendly and I make it so I have 15 minutes in between every single scheduled call. So as soon as somebody schedules a call with me, nobody could book a meeting that's within 15 minutes on either side. I also, and this is something I highly recommend, unless you're in the business of putting out fires, but really when you're a subscription attorney, you're in the problem avoidance business, not in the problem solving business. It's a different philosophical mindset and you need to engage in some growth mindset in order to start thinking that way, but I don't let anyone schedule any time with me within 24 hours. What that allows me to do is at the end of every day, I have time blocked. Time blocking can be at least a 30-minute presentation. I have time blocked when I'm done putting my kid to bed and spending time with my wife. I go to my computer and I look at my master list of all the items that I have to do daily, weekly, monthly, or new client issues that have come in, and they're all prioritized accordingly. I'm actually looking for a technology solution to automate some of this. And I go in, and that's at 8:30 every night for me. And so I make it starting at 8:30, and nobody could book with me the next day. So I know everything I'm gonna do the next day. And things still come up, you know, there are some changes and some meetings get canceled, which frees up time, or some other issues arise. Like, I'm not perfect, especially as a true solo, right? So find an accountability partner if you're gonna do this. But this is really important when you're no longer billing by your time. Just because you're not billing by your time, I'm in the camp of you don't need to track your time, but you need to control your time. And this is how you do it, time blocking. A lot of technology does that stuff for you, right? So here we go, Calendly, HubSpot, Acuity, Google Appointments. Google Appointments is pretty cool if you're a Calendly user and you only have one email. I have several, so I need Calendly because I could integrate my personal, my business one, and then my non-legal work that I do. Microsoft Bookings is a version of this. There's more. I'm a big fan of newsletters. I mentor a lot of law students, and I've recently been telling them the way that they could distinguish themselves is by showing that they could build a book. Even if it's not a book of business, they could build a newsletter that they get people subscribing to as they become thought leaders on a topic. I'm a big fan of this. And it could be the freemium version of your subscription is your newsletter. This is actually heavily under-optimized with current law firms. I'm sure on some law firm websites you see, subscribe to our newsletter, and you might get like 3 a year. This has to be part of your strategy. And you could have your freemium tier to non-subscribers, then different periodic subscriber-only benefits. In the same way that there are paid newsletters and that's what they do, there's value in just niching down and doing one thing, but to the extent you could outsource this kind of thing or use ChatGPT or its successors or other competitors, this would be a good place for something like that. And then it's an opportunity to remind existing subscribers about other services, because one of the benefits of the subscription model is they're bought into you. They're already paying you. So So just make sure they know that they can continue to use you and you have other services that you offer, because it's easier to upsell than it is to acquire new customers or new clients. Here's a bunch of newsletter tech: Beehive, SendinBlue, Substack, MailChimp, HubSpot, Constant Contact. They're built in with a lot of CRM tools. Even some legal tech client portals have built-in newsletter software, so it's all over. CRM was briefly mentioned in the last talk. This is where you keep prospective client contact information, but also current client contact information, their business, their personal information, records all the data on those communications. If it's well integrated with your client portal software, like this is your practice management software, right? This should be in there, and it integrates. I'm a big fan of trying to do things differently, if you could tell. Instead of in your CRM sending letters for Thanksgiving, for New Year's, for all that stuff, you should have your anniversary day with your client. Happy anniversary to when we first started working together, when I first started to serve you, right? So get creative. And it's easier to track that with a CRM. You could use Excel, you could use Google Sheets. It's a good starting point, it's not ideal. But what you can do with a lot of these CRM tools is you could import these. SweetDash, the software I use right now, has one built in that's pretty good. HubSpot, though it is really expensive. Clio Grow is an example of this. Lawmatics, there's so many. For your internet phone, this makes it accessible for calls and texts from a web browser or a desktop app. And like the last presentation, I don't have a desk phone. I have an app on my phone, which is really convenient, though I don't really use it because I have everyone schedule encrypted calls with me on Zoom. But you do have a record of everything. And if you're just using your personal cell phone, you're doing it wrong. No client should have your personal cell phone. It's like $15 a month with the taxes and stuff to get a virtual phone. And if, when you're paying for it and you're not just using free Google Voice, for example, there are some advanced features that come in handy. Google Voice, that's what I use because I'm all in on Google Workspace. Any legal tech founders back there that don't integrate with Google Docs, I'm not gonna use your software. Open Phone is another really good example there. Prices are competitive with Google Voice, and if you're not integrated with Google, that could be a good solution for you. Zoom offers this feature now. Zoom is actually starting to try to compete with Google Workspace. They're offering all kinds of cool new features, so if you're already subscribing to Zoom, it might be worthwhile to look into what they're doing for VoIP. GoToConnect, RingCentral, there's a lot. Do your research, obviously. None of these are an endorsement of any of these pieces of technology. Do your research. You can meet with clients anywhere. Clients expect it. I feel like this group kind of appreciates these already. Paid plans have access to advanced features without time limitations. Encryption. This is huge. This goes back to why I only message my clients through a secure client portal with two-factor authentication. I'm trying to be ethical and preserve attorney-client privilege. I'm not worried about my phones being tapped, but that is something that can happen. With encrypted Zoom calls, it's a lot harder. I actually push all my clients toward encrypted Zoom calls, even if they just keep the video off. Secure document sharing. Emailing documents is not secure. Don't do it. Probably an ethics violation, though I know like we haven't really seen those yet. Nothing I say is actual ethical advice. It's all for educational purposes only. There are plugins and solutions to make them secure. I used to use some plugin for Microsoft Outlook that required you send a password and do these other things, but it also looked a lot like someone's trying to engage in phishing. So I'm not a fan of them, and it creates friction. Cloud document sharing has less friction, but it has to be protected by a sign-in with two-factor authentication. All this is necessary. I know you're like, okay, I get it, technology, but if you're not using technology and being super efficient and ethical at the same time, you cannot be successful with having a subscription model. This is why I'm spending the time on technology. This is the only way documents should be shared, in my opinion. So Google Docs via paid Google Workspace account. Do not use a personal Gmail account and share docs on Google Drive. Read the terms of service, or at least tell ChatGPT to explain them to you or summarize them to you, because they're crawling everything that's shared through email and Google Drive if you're using just a free Gmail account. At any time I get an email from a lawyer that is using Gmail, I tell them it's only $6 a month. $6 a month. You've been practicing law for 25 years, okay? I think you could afford $6 a month, and it's gonna look way more professional. I will do it for you. I will set it up for you. It will take me 2 minutes. SharePoint, OneDrive, a little clunky, but you know, it works. Dropbox, Box, a lot of client portals offer it. SweetDash offers it. Fidoo, I'm pretty sure, offers it. PDFs and e-signatures, really important, right? You don't wanna be going in person and getting wet signatures unless you absolutely have to, because your jurisdiction and your practice area is behind the times, right? Efficiency really, really matters. You have to be able to edit PDFs quickly, e-signature, super easy, super fast. And only one party needs to have it for the paid software. A lot of client portals now do this, though Adobe and DocuSign are kind of the best. I like Adobe Acrobat Pro because it's both a PDF editor and an e-signature tool. The $20 a month I'm paying is well worth it, and I use it all the time. Document automation is the number one thing. This is where you're gonna save the most amount of time. I mean, that and intake and onboarding, right? But this especially for the client work. There's no reason to ever draft documents from scratch again, ever. Gavel is launching a marketplace where attorneys can sell to each other their pre-made automated forms. I cannot wait. I think it's soft launched. I cannot wait until that's launched. For the profession, for the sake of the profession, and myself. Intake, questionnaires, fact gathering, contracts, pleadings, everything can be automated with document automation. There's bring your own documents versus document databases. What I'm currently using, though I am going to be switching to Gavel soon, is called FormuLaw, so the Illinois Institute of Continuing Legal Education, and they are both. They have document database and automation, but they lack some of the other fun features. Oh yeah, there's a question, go ahead.
Sorry, can I ask a question that is off topic a little bit?
Sure.
So, I don't know, what state are you in?
I'm in Illinois, and I practice state law.
Okay, does your state accept earn upon receipt, and is that how you treat the payments, the subscription payments from your clients as earn upon receipt?
Yes, for my subscriptions, I do.
Can you repeat the question?
Oh, yeah. So for everyone else, the question was about earned fees. And if Illinois allows me to, for my subscriptions, to have it be an earned fee that goes directly into my operating account. Well, it depends. What's in your engagement agreement? And what is actually ethical in your state? You're going to have to do the research for your jurisdiction. In Illinois, you're allowed to have something distinguished as an earned fee. But we're going to get into the ethics at the very end of the presentation. So you have to still comply with the ethics, right? And how it's defined as an earned fee and what it is. It has to be a reasonable amount and all that, right? So my subscription starts at $20 a month, and in exchange for that, they get access to different things, which I'll talk about. And so they're getting the value for that. Turnkey automations versus customizable automations. I'm more in favor of customizing your automations, but it does take time. There are consultants and some of the companies that offer these services also help you with that. The software that I'm using right now, FormuLaw, you cannot customize, which I'm not a huge fan of, but it's a document database and automation, and it's $28 a month, so it was hard to complain about. This is how you build a marketplace that competes with LegalZoom. And software like Gavel will help you do that. Speaking of, Gavel, formerly Documate, Legal Karma does it, although they are starting to look more outside of the legal profession. Pattern Builder, formerly AfterPattern, but NetDocs acquired it, and now you have to be a NetDocs user in order to get access to it. Which is really disappointing, but with Documate's recent brand change and some of the new offerings, they're kind of filling that gap for the rest of the market that AfterPattern used to fill. FormuLaw, which is what I am currently using, but soon I'll be switching to Gavel. 650 does it. They are a sponsor of my podcast, Law Subscribed. Speed Legal does document automation in the analysis sense. There are more and more of these AI tools coming out that will automate analyzing documents for you. I've beta tested so many of these. I kind of like Speed Legal the most, but they're all still so far away from actually identifying all the red flags. So you can't just rely on this technology yet, but it is getting better. On the other hand, LegalOn is in beta, and they just focus the AI on NDAs. And because they're only focusing on one kind of contract, they're doing it a lot better. But they're in early beta right now. And generative AI, like LawDroid, has a product in beta for document automation stuff. This should be in the materials, and you could always email me, and I'll send you stuff. I did make a couple of changes. This used to just say Documate, not Gavel, when I first made this. A knowledge base, super important. Fidu, this is part of what they offer too. Going back to my subscription, even at $20 a month, they're getting access to my knowledge base. It's actual questions asked by clients where I've removed identifying information, but it's actual legal advice in the knowledge base. And I have been playing around with using ChatGPT to take on the role of my client avatars, right? So you are a freelancer in their 20s, who is a graphic designer, and you're in the Chicagoland area, and what are the questions you have about running your business from a legal perspective? Then if I'm not actually getting good questions, I'm trying to use ChatGPT to come up with them for me, and then that way I can answer them, and so I could add to the value of my knowledge base.
Do you require a new engagement letter each time you start a new project, even if they're already a subscriber?
The way that I've designed my engagement agreement, it accounts for that. And my engagement agreement is on my website. Sometimes I do addendums to that engagement agreement, depending on the situation, but I draft those pretty quickly and take care of it.
How do you account for issues where, like, if there's a concern concern about the scope of representation, making sure the client's aware of exactly what you're doing for them at any one time?
The way I've designed my own practice is completely unbundled legal services, and then my subscription packages are like rebundling some of those unbundled services, and it's very explicit as to what they're getting, which is exactly what's stated on my website as well, in like the marketing material. The marketing material and my engagement agreement go hand in hand.
Are you going to talk about this more during this presentation?
Oh, yeah, we're getting there. How much time do I have? Okay, I'm going to fly through some of this stuff. Removing identifying information, reduce the need to reinvent the wheel, especially if you're a solo or general practitioner like me. This is not just a knowledge base for your clients, it's a knowledge base for you. Notion, Zoho Desk, Zendesk, WordPress plugins, Google Docs via Workspace, not ideal, same with SharePoint, but they can work. Client portals like Fidoo can help you with this too. Everything should be integrated. Sometimes the technology doesn't naturally talk to each other, but there's a lot of tools that help you do that to streamline different processes. I interviewed an attorney on my podcast last week. His episode won't air until June, but he said he had seriously 20,000 zaps in Zapier.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you have to maintain the process and you have to evolve it, but it's absolutely worth it. A lot of apps already integrate with each other. Calendly seems to integrate with everything these days, which is great. Zapier, Make, formerly Integromat, if this, then that, HubSpot, Stripe integrates with a lot of things, and hopefully client portal features do too. Final tech tips. Tools with unlimited usage are great, like Adobe Pro and Calendly. Subscriptions are about scale, so the more clients you sign up makes these tools more than pay for themselves. All of the tech solutions that I have right now are costing me $120 a month. I don't need many clients to pay for that. And I'm able to serve all of them equally the same way in a lot of ways because of all that. Although my tech spend is about to go up a little bit. It's easier to spend on technology when you know how many subscribers pay for your subscriptions used to power your practice. The same is applicable to monthly spend, like you have monthly insurance costs if you pay for it monthly, your rent if you have physical office space, salaries, etc. You're already paying things every single month. Now it's easier for you to manage your business financially when you know what your monthly recurring revenue is versus your monthly spend. And you do it with technology. You know, there's LawNext and all these different marketplaces to do more research. So how do you adapt the subscription model? Here are the ways you do it. Pure subscriptions. Subscriptions and flat fees, subscription add-ons, practice. It depends on your practice area, you know, what you're doing with transactional versus litigation. I'm about to do a deep dive on all these. And then how to price it. The pure subscription model. This is where they pay you something and they get something in exchange, and it is scoped and defined as best you can in your engagement agreement. Started with trademarks, right? What could that look like? That could look something like unlimited cease and desist letters, unlimited attorney-client communications, which is usually scheduled communications. They can't call you whenever they want, but you limit your calendar availability and they could schedule time to talk with you. I do month-to-month subscriptions because if my client abuses my services and schedules 10, 15-minute calls in a row, I'm gonna drop them. Trademark searches, like this is just an example. I don't think this is a real example, right? But I'm just giving you an example. Fractional outside or in-house counsel, right? I've heard this as general counsel as a service. This is actually what I do. I have pure subscriptions using that model. Could cover anything that an in-house attorney would cover, right? But instead of them paying a full-time employee a six-figure salary with benefits, they could pay me $1,500, $5,000, or $10,000 a month, and listed on my website is what they get in exchange for that amount. I also do custom packages. If a client's needs are somewhere in between, I'm happy to do that, but I don't have automation set up for all those. But if I get enough demand, then I will set up an automation for that. Document marketplace with optional automations and legal advice, right? So you can sell documents on your website. There are at least a couple of attorneys doing this in the wedding space. They're selling documents on their website for wedding vendors to use to run their business. But hey, if you actually wanted to hire me to give you legal advice about that document, you could also do that. What they're not doing is they're just doing flat fee. They're saying, buy these for a flat fee. What they should be doing is charging a subscription for access to all the documents, because they do get updated as laws change and the lawyer learns new things and updates those documents. Yeah.
So I'm doing this, I do outside GC too, and we're about to kind of launch what you're talking about. My question is, are you severing it from your firm? So if I let you do the documents?
It depends, Okay. Should this be a separate business is the question essentially. And sometimes yes, and sometimes no. Just gotta figure out what works for you and also look at your local rules. You know, Hello Divorce is kind of an example of this too, right? Hello Prenup is another one. There's more and more of these cropping up. I spoke to an attorney at Tech Show who wants to do this for condo associations. Riches in the niches, right? Legal adjacent services. So if I'm a criminal defense attorney, I can't maybe charge a subscription. Maybe I can, but probably not. But then where can I monetize that? Well, you have legal knowledge. That's really important after you make sure that they get off and they're on probation. So maybe you have a course that you made that you have to make once or once in a while if laws change that they subscribe to. And it's a course that you sell to them and you're making some recurring revenue on past clients, right? And if you do a good job, they'll want to subscribe because you helped get them off and now they're on probation. Here's how you comply with probation. This is just one idea, right? There's so many doing this on my own. Like, I don't know all the different ways to do this. That's why I have the podcast and I interview lawyers doing it all different kinds of ways. Subscription plus flat fee. I also do this model. This isn't in a slide, but I encourage law firms that are already offering flat fees is to continue to offer your flat fees, but figure out what the right number is to charge them a monthly amount, where then you give a percentage discount on all your other flat fee work, 10%, 15%. You know, you have to figure out what that number is that you think they'll pay in exchange for that future discount. That's a way to use the subscription and flat fee model. That's not how I use it. I only offer my flat fee services to subscribers, and I already charge below market rates to do it. So things like corporate formation, right? Because it's one and done. A real estate transaction, it's one and done. Just general transactional work. Usually, you know, you help them negotiate the contract or you help them do the prenup and they're done, right? So when you're a general transactional attorney like me, you help them do the prenup, then they get married, they buy a home, I represent them on that transaction, they want to have an estate plan. If it's too complicated, I have to comply with my own legal ethics. I don't do too much estate planning work, but if they just need something simple, I could help them with that. Otherwise, I refer them out. Sometimes I could help them depending on what their needs are. And then they have something come up at work, I could advise them on an offer letter or a separation agreement, right? So they stay subscribed. You unbundle your services and you have flat fee add-ons. I also am a big fan of subscription add-ons. I actually unbundle negotiations for my subscriptions, and that's a subscription add-on. Landlords love that one. I now have a unique package for landlords. Sometimes they don't want you to do negotiations. Sometimes they want to work with their tenants on their own. Freelancers love it too, because freelancers want to develop the relationship with their clients, so they don't want you negotiating for them. Plus, they don't want their clients thinking that they're being paid too much so that they could hire a lawyer, because they don't know I only, you know, cost $20 a month to get started. This is the only way it works for litigation. I don't think the subscription model can work for litigation on its own, but it can help solve and fill the gap of under or over scoping issues, especially in high volume cases, right, like insurance.
Can you go deeper on that issue, or if you have time?
If I have time at the end, you could stick around. I do have a formula for that, yeah, for litigation. It's a problem I'm constantly trying to solve because it's a question I get a lot, but for foreclosure prosecution, insurance, defense, and debt collection, the formula is super easy. It sort of depends. With criminal defense, I don't know. Like maybe. I'm not a criminal attorney, but I would love to talk to some and see if this would be ethical in your jurisdiction to do a flat fee to start, monthly amount throughout that's less than the flat fee, and then a settlement fee, a mediation fee, or a success fee depending on results. There's a lot of different ways to structure this, but you can structure it. And like I take the access to justice approach, right? My fees are super low intentionally. I'm trying to serve the latent legal market. You know, you could look at a litigation case and maybe you make, on average, you make maybe $10,000 or whatever it is from your case. Let's say it's $10,000. Structure a subscription and flat fee model for your litigation where you make $20,000. But your client knows exactly what they're going to pay. And they'll be happy with that, I think. So there's still opportunity to make more money and not be billing your time. Keep it simple. Right? So you don't want to have a million options. Now, I do put all my pricing on my website, but it's not a button that somebody could click on right away. I have a very intentional client journey on my website, but they can eventually see all of my prices, but I don't want to overload them. No more than 3 offerings at a time. There's been a lot of psychology work done on this. I highly recommend the book Subscribed by Tian Zhou. It's a great book on the subscription economy in general. Give options of different tiers or levels. The thing is, no more than 3, but no less than 2. It should be 2 or 3. Because if you give them one option, it's yes or no. So give them at least 2, but no more than 3. Obviously, I'm using it for my own subscription law firm. A low accessible price for the market you're trying to serve.
What do they get for that price?
They get access to schedule 15-minute calls with me. That's actual legal advice consultations. But it's a limited time frame. My entry level is only 2 hours a day at the end of my day that they get access to. And my premier level and up They get access to whatever my availability is on my calendar. They get access to my below market flat fee services, and they get access to my growing knowledge base. And they can message me in the client portal, and I'll let them know if I could get back to them within a certain amount of time. But I also make more money from them when they are paying for other flat fee services. Because when I bundle flat fee services, and I will get to this, you're giving a discount on all of that pricing that you're transparent with. That's bundled in, and a slight discount for somebody who's willing to pay $1,500 a month, $5,000 a month, et cetera. So yeah, subscription add-ons, like my negotiation package. Your higher subscription levels should be a discount on the a la carte flat fee services and include subscription add-ons. Flat fee add-ons are good too. They're really important for one-off transactions if that makes sense for your practice. But when you can get them to do a subscription add-on, then you have more guaranteed monthly recurring revenue. And this is implicit, but I don't think I actually say it anywhere, but like, you gotta keep your clients happy and you have to do good work, right? If you're not like a good lawyer and good at what you do and like good with the client relationships, then it's not gonna work. That's a different talk. This helps sell the value of higher subscription levels. And by the way, take this and pull this apart and put it back together in a way that works for you. You can see my website, for example, subscriptionattorney.com. I charge $19.99 a month, and I use that pricing to compete with what consumers are used to spending, but also what they're used to seeing. Do I really need the extra cent? No. I charge $50 a page for document drafting and analysis. That's unbundled from negotiations. I have three buckets, and no more than three tiers per bucket. So you come to my website, I charge $19.99 a month, schedule a time to talk with me, and they will get me. It's only 15 minutes. I used to not have that on the front page of my website, but once I added that, I actually get a lot more clients that sign up for those intake calls, and I'm converting. And then I have Learn More. So two buttons, two options on the first page. They click Learn More, they're presented with three more options. Are you an individual? Are you a freelancer? Are you a business owner? Here are the prices for those ranges. Here's what I offer in a very short summary. I try to keep it on one page so you don't have to scroll. And then depending on what their needs are, they could also give me a test drive. Businesses have given me a test drive at $20 a month, and then they sign up at $1,500. So they're willing to pay a little bit more to try out a la carte services before they're willing to buy in. I've started to experiment with something new here, so feel free to take it. There's massive market opportunity with the latent legal market, so I'm not worried about competition. It's something that I'm calling the employee legal services plan. Their employer pays the $20 a month and they get access to all the flat fee services. It's not advertised on my website, but I do have a shareable link, and I've been talking to business owners at my Chamber of Commerce about it, and people seem really interested in this. As an employee benefit, the employer pays the $20 a month.
When you unbundled your services and you do like a small part of like what is a bigger, you know, matter for the client, do you warn them of like, you know, other deadlines or other issues that they should be looking out that you're not working on, that way they don't avoid, you know, they don't miss a deadline that is like in the future that you're not dealing with?
I'm not doing litigation, so I have very few deadlines.
I don't know, like you draft like a will, but there might be some tax implications that you're not dealing with. So do you tell them about that, or like, you know, like spot some issues that you're not dealing with, that way they can look elsewhere, or you just focus on doing that one particular task?
I over-explain everything to my clients, and in writing, in the client portal messaging whenever I can. I used to make it hard to unsubscribe, but then I learned that clients like to be able to unsubscribe and resubscribe. And when they use you and they have a login to the client portal, they will log back in when they need legal services, even if they're not subscribed. I'd prefer they stay subscribed, but they have the same account information. Easy unsubscribe and resubscribe, just with a button on your website. Yeah.
I'm also a corporate transactional lawyer. I saw that you charge $50 to $49.99 per page for reviewing a contract. As you know, as well as I do, painfully, some contracts are more complex than others, and pages are more complex than others, and it might take you a lot longer to review three or four pages of a particular contract that are particularly knotty, and then others are, you know, a breeze.
Well, you would hate to see my business subscriptions because I have projects in there, and my projects are just, they could be 10 projects a month, for example. That could be a contract, a letter, a research project. I am not thinking about my time at all because I'm being as efficient with my time as possible, utilizing all the technology resources that I can to cut away all the time that I would spend and be wasting time. And because of that, the incentives with the client are actually aligned. I'm not looking for extra billable work.
No, I understand that, but don't you sometimes lose money because certain pages are more complex?
I'm not losing money. I'm making money. I'm making $50 a page. I'm not billing my time. My time is not what's valuable. The service I'm providing is what's valuable. I am not thinking about my time being valuable. I'm thinking about I'm providing a service and I'm getting value in exchange for it.
But you only have so many hours in the day.
I do.
To spend two or three negotiating a contract for one of these clients that you didn't anticipate, for example. Let's say the negotiation drags on because you have a difficult party on the other side.
It all balances out. It all balances out in the long run. I'm not going to sit on the phone. I'm going to find another way around it. And I'm going to find an ethical and reasonable way to not let it take that long. That's what I'm going to do, because I'm not incentivized to let it take long. So yeah, I take the anti-law firm approach. You don't have to. Traditional looking law firms using this model, I think, are in demand. In fact, I've lost a few clients that don't want subscription attorney LLC on the letterhead. And that's fine. It's not a good fit. But they love the model. I'm even thinking about launching a DBA and another brand, Curbis Legal Service. There's market opportunity there. But I'm doing a lot, so I'm probably not going to do that. But I'm thinking about it. I saw a question.
Well, I know that you let them unsubscribe at any time, but is there a contract like where they can't get out within a certain period? Because what if like they subscribe, you know, they get that initial consultation, they get what they need, and then they unsubscribe like the next month, right?
Yeah, thanks. Come back when you have more legal issues that you need solved, and I'll be happy to take your money and help you. It's fine with me. You know, in exchange for very valuable legal services. Trade name firm for niching down, right? We'll fight for you, California personal injury attorneys. Trade names are allowed. Thank you, Law HQ. So use a trade name if you want. If you want to build a brand and you eventually want to cash in on the brand that you've built and you want to sell your law firm in 10, 20, 30 years and you have monthly recurring revenue and data that you could show the purchaser, you're going to make bank. Huge opportunity here. And this kind of came up in the last presentation. What about non-English speaking options for client portal stuff? I know of the couple dozen attorneys using the subscription model, I think maybe two of them employ somebody who speaks Spanish. Huge market opportunity here. We're going to do a speed round on ethics. Sorry, running out of time, folks. This is all in the notes, and there's nothing here that's too much of a surprise, right? These are the model rules. You know, consult ethics counsel. You're allowed to limit the scope of representation. The terms have to be explicit, and you have to let them know about limitations. The limitation must be reasonable under the circumstances. So what are the circumstances? Part of the reason why I'm approaching the latent legal market with very, very low-cost legal services is because I think they're very reasonable in light of the high value of service I'm actually providing. That's just the approach that I'm choosing to take with it. It doesn't mean you can't comply with this by charging a premium. But all lawyers charge a premium. Reasonableness factors include whether the fee is fixed or contingent. So the model rules already contemplate fixed fees. And like it was mentioned in the last talk, a subscription is just a fixed fee every month. That's all it is. It also contemplates regularly represented clients, right? So if your clients are subscribing to you, I'd consider that regularly represented clients. Everything's on my website. So I give your client a memorandum or whatever, but I'm not keeping anything I'm doing a secret from anyone. I also want all you to copy me to the extent that that's relevant to you. I don't care. None of my stuff is protected. And there's no hidden anything with my clients or the general public. Everything's transparent, everything is out there, and everything's automated, and everything is tracked. A lawyer may require advance payment of a fee, but is obliged to return any unearned portion, right? So this goes back to the question of earned fees. You have to be careful with how you define an earned fee in your jurisdiction, but it is something that you can do. And if you're hesitant about it, you could put the subscription into your trust account, and at the end of the month, transfer it. We're lawyers, we're problem solvers. Comply ethically. If you're concerned about it being an unearned fee, put the fee in your trust fund for that first 30 days, depending on if it's 30 days or per month, whatever your engagement agreement says, and transfer it as soon as the next payment comes in. Because at that point, you know, it's earned. A lawyer should not exploit a fee arrangement based primarily on hourly charges by using wasteful procedures. I read this to be, if you're not using legal technology to be as efficient as possible, that's a wasteful procedure. I know that's a little bit of an extreme position, but eventually, you will not be able to make as much money billing hours as using the subscription and flat fee model. So do you want to wait until that happens, or do you want to be ready for it now? Final thoughts on ethics, speak with ethics counsel, be transparent with your fees. I'm transparent everywhere and in triplicate. Be creative how you approach it. My subscribers get access and subscriber benefits, access to unlimited scheduled calls, below market flat fee rates. I talked about all this answering questions. Here's my contact information. Feel free to reach out. And if you want to launch a subscription for your law practice, I'll be happy to interview you on my podcast, Law Subscribed. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'll stick around if there's any questions.
And that's our show. Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for being sponsors. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with somebody you think would find value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kurbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kurbis with Law Subscribed.